Hi, Elliot. It's very nice speaking with you today.
Likewise, happy to be with you.
Glad we had the opportunity to talk about this upcoming show in Brookfield, Connecticut on August 19th in the Brookfield Theater. I hear you're from Connecticut originally. Is that true?
Yes, I am a Connecticut native all my life. I lived outside the state briefly, but almost probably 95% of my life I've been in Connecticut. I'm from Norwalk originally, and now I'm in New Haven County.
Okay, so this is like your host to your hometown, this upcoming gig in
It
Brookfield.
is. Yeah. I still like this state. You know, I always said when I was younger, if I hadn't traveled as much as I have, I'd probably live outside. But, you know, I've traveled so much, and every time I come back to Connecticut, I always think this is really not a bad place to live at all. So I still love it here.
It's beautiful. Now, let me ask you a question. I've been doing a deep dive into your music history and all the collabs you've done, all the bands you've worked with and artists, and your own beginnings in music. And the wiki says that you are a rock, soul, and R&B artist, but on your website it says you're a singer-songwriter. Having listened to some of your live performances, I'd say you're a rocker. Like, how would you describe your music?
Well, it's all of the above. I am a singer and a songwriter, obviously, but yeah, I would say my music, you know, sometimes it's hard to define what we do, but my first love is sort of classic rock and soul. All the stuff that I grew up on, that I was exposed to when I was young, you know, was David Bowie and Todd Rundgren and The Who and then eventually Cheap Trick and you know, but then there was my love of soul music too, and Stevie Wonder and Sly and the Family Stone. So it all sorts of, it just sort of mixes together. But you know, I do lean a little bit more towards the rock side of the tracks.
Well, you're very versatile. I mean, the
So.
fa average white band who you played with between 89 and 2002 was
Yeah, exactly.
that's a
Yeah.
kind of different, genre as like say Hall and Oates. So you're very versatile artist from what I see and what I've heard, and the fact that you're a multi-instrumentalist as well. Now tell me about that. I know that you play several different instruments. Did you generally play guitar in these bands, or did you move around?
Well, let's see. If I go way back, I started as a drummer, actually. So my first instrument was on drums. And then, you know, like a lot, probably a lot of drummers, I gravitated to guitar because I wanted to be able to write music and, you know, and have some fun in the front of the stage. But then once I got to probably about 17 or 18 years old and started getting more serious about it, I sort of realized that you know, obviously I knew I wanted to do this for the rest of my life. So you know, at some point I wanted to be a real serious songwriter and be able to sort of be a self-contained songwriter. So I learned keyboards. I started playing keys in the early 80s. And then once the technology sort of the boom started happening in the 80s, you know, we were able to put together a lot of music, you know, via keyboards with sampling and sequencers, and I sort of jumped into that head first back then. So, but you know, it sort of served me well because I've been able to adapt to certain situations, like in the average white band you've just mentioned me. I was able to play some keyboards. I played bass guitar in some of the songs, and I sang. And then later on, when I joined Hall and Oates, actually, now I've always sort of, you know, aside from drums, I've always sort of looked at myself more as a guitar player than anything. But when Daryl Hall asked me to join Hall and Oates, the position that was open was the keyboard position. So that just sort of stuck, and I just continued on with it. I mean, I love all the instruments. I have fun with all of them, but I sort of view myself more than anything as a guitar player.
Now you've been touring and working with Hall & Oates for since 2003. if my information is correct.
Yeah, 2003, I think, was the first year. But, from what I understand, I left. Now, I'm no longer with Hall & Oates.
Right.
Hall & Oates aren't really touring together, I don't think, anymore. So, I was with Daryl up till here. And when it was sort of evident that Hall & Oates probably weren't going to tour, Daryl is, continuing on in his solo career.
Right.
And we went out on the road and toured with the great Todd Rundgren all year. And I've worked with him over the years many times. And so I just came to a point I had to kind of decide where I wanted to put most of my, time and energy. And I have been managing my own solo career for a decade now alongside Hall & Oates. So I thought this is a good time to just really dive into my own career 100%.
Right, yeah, I read that.
So, yeah.
And live at Daryl's house, too. I mean, I know you're a staple there. You've been in every show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's on Amazon? I forget which network that's on. For streaming, right? Live at Daryl's?
Well, it started out very, very small. And then it eventually, it went to Tribune Network, and then it eventually went to MTV, and then it went to a cable-based show, Access TV. Then it went to Access.
Okay.
And then I don't know really where it's going to be. It is going to be coming back out. I've filmed some of the new episodes that haven't been released. So up until now, I've been on every episode, yeah.
Wow.
So I'm not sure where people will be able to find the brand new episodes that are yet to come out. But I think they'll be out this year.
Now,
and there's some very cool guests we work with.
Oh, I can't wait to watch that. I'll have to find it, one of those streaming services. But I did read, you mentioned that you put out solo albums all throughout, like your time touring.
Yeah.
I mean, I read that you produced 10 albums, 10 solo albums, is that correct?
About 10.
Yeah.
And if people were wondering, like, a lot of my stuff still isn't on Spotify right now. I'm about to re-release a lot of music on all the streaming forms. So there'll be a lot of stuff that hits all the streaming services very, very soon.
So you mentioned that you're focusing on your solo career. So, like, how'd you come to that decision? Take a break from all the touring or work collaborating? What was the impetus
for
that?
Well, yeah, I mean, for so long, I was really just focused on being an artist myself. And when a band like Hall & Oates come along and they invite you to join the band, it's a hard situation to turn down because it was an incredible experience. I mean, it just, I traveled all over the world with them. I mean, I did with the Average White Band, but, Hall & Oates were typically playing big arenas and big festivals. And, my dream gig as a child, was always Madison Square Garden. I went to Madison through a friend of mine whose father, I started playing drums when I was a kid, and my best friend had started playing bass, and his father was in the music business and took us to shows when we were kids, and a lot of them were at Madison Square Garden. So that was the pinnacle of success for me. And with Hall & Oates, I played there several times and played all of the big venues all over the world, Red Rocks and Hollywood Bowl, O2 Arena, Wembley, pretty much every Carnegie Hall, everywhere a musician could ever dream of playing, I played with Hall & Oates. So, there wasn't really much more to experience, really, with that. It was amazing, so I just thought the time was right to really do what I got into music for, which is to be my own artist and to try to communicate my own music to people.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a riot songwriter in your own right, you want people to hear your music.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I got into it for. There are so many different kinds of musicians. There are musicians that just play their instrument and become great at it, but I started more as a songwriter, and that to me was, more important than just being a really proficient musician. And so, of course, in a Hall & Oates situation, Daryl and John wrote such, there's not really a room for you know, any extra songwriting. So, you know, in my own world, I can do all that, and I'm loving it. I'm so happy right now.
Oh, great! It's good to hear that.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you touched upon people that influenced you musically when you were younger, going to see concerts in Madison Square Garden. You mentioned Jeff Beck. Who else influenced your musical endeavors or inspired you?
You see, early on, I would say David Bowie was a big influence on me. And then right almost at the same time, Todd Rundgren. I have two older brothers that turned me on to music when I was a kid, and you know, they were each of them five years older than me, so they were, you know, exposing me to all this great music, a lot of the British stuff, the Who, the Beatles. I missed the Beatles. I was a little too young to catch the steam of the Beatles, but Todd Rundgren was a big influence, and it really was, when I look back and I look at my career and how I became sort of a multi-instrumentalist like Todd, I realized how much of an influence he was, because I sort of took that same direction. And like Stevie Wonder was, you know, played a lot of the instruments records. So that fascinated me, and it kind of stuck with me, and that's the direction I went in. But there were a lot of people that I loved. Another person that was sort of in my life through my friend was Peter Frampton, and sort of witnessed his whole career sort of blow up, because my friend's father was his promotion man at A&M Records. So there was one instance where we literally jammed with him when I was about 14 years old. So I was exposed to a lot of good stuff and met people like Alice Cooper and Elton John.
Oh, wow.
Of course, The Who, and you know, it was really an amazing journey for me early on, and so it sort of put fuel on the fire for me to continue this for the rest of my life.
What was it like to jam with Peter Frampton at that age?
It was fun and exciting. It was that was just before he sort of exploded with the big Frampton Comes Alive record. But we knew him because he was in a band earlier than that called Humble Pie that my brothers loved. So it was exciting. And, you know, we had a room set up at my friend's house that we jammed in every day after school. And then I think one Sunday, Frampton and his girlfriend came over to meet with my friend's father. And, you know, we were in the basement jamming, and he came down and just joined in.
God.
It was pretty fun, but very casual, you know. There was
teenage musician
thought out setup. It was just a very natural sort of thing.
Every teenage musician's dream.
Yeah, exactly.
A rock star. Well, he wasn't quite a rock star yet, but soon to be.
So honestly, there's been so many moments like that in my career. I've been so, and then, you know, then much later on, after joining Hall & Oates, Daryl started the Live from Daryl's House show. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I got to work with so many of my childhood heroes. Cheap Trick was another band that I loved when I was a teenager, and work with them, and Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top, Joe Walsh. We worked recently with Glenn Tilbrook from Squeeze. So just on and on, I think I've worked with about 100 different artists on that show. So it's been just incredible experience.
I, you know, have to go back and look at the archives, because I remember watching it years ago. I haven't watched it recently, and I'll have to look out for you. And
exactly.
As we talk about meeting or working with other musicians, as a solo artist, is there any collaboration that you'd like to share with us that was in particularly inspiring or enjoyable to you as a musician? Songwriter?
Yeah, I mean, well, right now I'm not doing so much collaborating. I did a ton of collaborating in most of my career. You know, obviously I was with those bands. I was with the Average White Band for 13 years, and then Hall & Oates for 18 years. And then even before that, I was a songwriter. Like, I had a publishing deal with Sony, and then a publishing deal with Warner Brothers, which lasted, I think, a total of about 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. So way back then in the 80s and like mid-90s, I was writing songs with a lot of different songwriters, collaborating with tons of people. I think a guy from the drummer for Prince's band, and one of the original members from Procol Harum, tons of people. It was really, really interesting. So I kind of, right now, because I've done so much collaboration, I'm kind of working more on my solo artist.
Right.
So it's a real different experience, but I do this show, which is, I don't know if you know what live looping is, if you know what looping is.
Of course.
It's a process of recording your playing or your instrument, and then, like, literally in front of people, live in the moment, and sort of building on that, layering the arrangement. So that's what I'm doing now, and it's a really unique thing, and I'm sort of creating a full band as just one member. So
now that we're talking about what you're doing now, ask you about your new album, Anything Is Possible.
Yeah.
I heard a few cuts from it, I think, from that live show on Daryl's House Club a few years ago, a song called Perfect Storm, Bump in the Road. Some of the tracks from there. I assume that a lot of that was inspired by our COVID times. Am I wrong?
Yeah, some of it was. Absolutely, yeah. I think, yeah, there's a song on it called When This Is All Over that
right.
I wrote by myself, you know, when nobody could go out and COVID first hit, you know. What a time that was. I remember, actually, the last time I played at Madison Square Garden was the end of 2019. Oh, no, it was the beginning of 2020. So it was literally just, like, weeks before it exploded. And so I wrote that song, one of the songs on that record, Anything Is Possible. But a lot of the other songs are really, you know, they sort of just reflect my outlook on life. They're very, very optimistic. And, you know, it's hard for me to write really anything dark and negative just because my career has been, I've had a very blessed career and very fortunate. So, you know, there's a song called Anything Is Possible. And another single I released from it called This Life Is What We Make It. So there's a lot of uplifting, sort of inspiring messages in the record.
I'm glad you said that, because one of my notes for this interview, I wrote, he's got positive messages. Like, you could tell, like, watching you live and listening to the lyrics, you've just got a lot, like, an optimistic point of view, regardless of the circumstances. And one of the lines I love from the song Perfect Storm was, you said, sunshine in my brain. I love that.
Yeah.
That's such a great line. I mean, it's inspiring. It's inspiring
to
me.
Well, it's all our perspective, right? It's all our perspective. When things are not going great around us, we can still make them good if our attitude is right. So that's sort of, I think, what I'm trying to say there, you know.
That's why I know the people who attend your upcoming show or your tour are going to appreciate the energy that you present, the positive outlook. And I think we all need that right now.
Yeah.
Now, talking about the show at the Brookfield Theater, it's on August 19th in Brookfield, Connecticut. You're going to be playing solo, is that correct? Or are you bringing with you?
No, that will be solo. This is what I've been doing for a couple of years. And it's pretty unique. You know, like I was saying, it's called the live looping show, and I'm creating all this stuff live and building up these songs. And what's interesting for me is that every time I play a song now, like even with a band, every time I play a song this way, it's a little bit different. The arrangement's different. The tempo's a little different. So sometimes things happen that I'm even surprised about. And I sort of, you know, try to read the audience and the energy of the audience. I can make songs shorter. I can make them longer. I can take one song and go into another song sort of on the spot. And so it's real interesting. I kind of just, I'm in the moment.
I always find it fascinating watching a musician when how they know when to start the loop. Like, how do they know?
Yeah. It's a little crazy, actually. I'll tell you. You know, it's, you know, you have to, when you're doing this, you have to hit a foot switch right at the right time. And it's very, you know, I'm using some technology to do this, but now I've done it, I don't have to think about it. I can just play and enjoy the music. But it's a little crazy. But, you know, most people that are doing this looping approach do it very simplistically. They'll, like, play an acoustic guitar, and they'll create create a rhythm maybe on their guitar and loop that, and then maybe play a chord structure. You know, that's mostly how the looping thing is approached, but my vision of it was a little different. I wanted to create a full band. So I'm actually creating drum parts on a drum pad. I'm playing everything with my hands, you know. I create a bass part, my guitar playing, I'm creating three-part harmony. So it's really interesting. People, it's now to the point where I'm really happy with it. It took a while, though.
It sounds very practice, sophisticated. Sure. It sounds very sophisticated to me. Are you going to be playing? So at that show, I know that you're going to be playing original music because that's, you know, what you're doing now, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of original songwriting, but I was wondering if you're going to be playing cover songs like Hall & Oates or Average White Band songs or any other.
Absolutely.
Artists.
Oh, yes, I do. Absolutely. I, you know, obviously I have a lot of my own music that I love to play. And I always think, you know, hopefully that we get back to supporting original artists right now. I think it's so important. There obviously there's a lot of tribute bands out now that are very, very, you know, much in fashion. But I just think it's so important to support original artists. But in my show, yeah, I play a bunch of cover songs, but pretty much all the cover songs that I play are solely played with those artists that are sort of special to me. They mean something to me. So, yeah, there's some Todd Rundgren and, you know, a Cheap Trick song and Hall & Oates, of course, Average White Band. Sometimes I'll throw in a Joe Walsh song, but almost all the covers are songs that I've actually played with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool. And they're different. You know, I don't try to make them exactly like the record. So you'll recognize something, but then you'll be like, oh, okay, it's a really different version of it.
Okay. Well,
yeah, which I like. You know, I mean, otherwise, you know, you can just see a cover band or a tribute band that's exactly like the records, you know. Right. And that's cool, but I think it's more interesting to hear something a little different.
I think there's a large audience that appreciates original music, but they'll really love hearing a song that they know you played on that they
exactly.
love.
Yeah, you know. Exactly.
Right. One of the songs, I don't know if you still play it, Burt Bacharach, Walk On By. And
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you were playing, I think that was a video from a Average White Band gig. I'm not sure, but I was just amazed by your vocal skill. Like your beautiful falsetto in that song. I'm wondering if that's a song you still cover.
You know, I do request to do that. I do it once in a while, but you are absolutely right. I did play that with Average White Band because they recorded for one of their records.
Oh.
And you know, at least back then, I had a high falsetto. I could sing really high. I don't sing quite as high anymore, but so when I've done it, I changed the key a little bit. But
that's okay.
That's such a great song. I mean, he was just a master songwriter.
Right.
But there's some surprises like that. I actually am adding a new song to my set that I think a lot of people will know. And it's a song by Tina Turner, who sadly passed away. But I play, fortunate to actually play on one of her big hits when I was doing more session work back in the late 80s. And a song called Simply the Best.
Uh-huh.
So I've actually worked that into my show. And I tell a story about, you know, actually having played on the song. So, nice. some new and interesting surprises.
I guess we all have to come head over to Brookfield, Connecticut on that date, Saturday, August 19th, and at the Brookfield Theater. And Ellie, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to seeing you
perform
live.
Oh, thanks so much. I had a great time. I really appreciate it.